Then we saw in Genesis 3 through 11 how badly we messed up. We saw Adam and Eve messing up. We saw Cain killing Abel. We saw the pride of the people at the Tower of Babel. And then we saw the sin that led to the destruction of the world and the salvation of Noah and his family. So that's sort of the first 11 chapters of Genesis is the story of the creation, the fall, and the degradation of human beings. But the rest of the Bible then is the story of how God is saving us. The chief figure then of the book of Genesis is Abraham. So we spent 2 weeks looking at Abraham. And God chooses Abraham, a man of faith. And God saw Abraham's faith and he credited it to him as righteousness. And we saw Abraham leaving Ur, leaving Haran. We saw Abraham going to Mount Moriah to sacrifice his one and only son. So then the story of the Bible then is God chooses a man, and through that man he creates a people, and through that people he creates a nation, and he gives them a place, and he gives them prophets and kings and prophecies, and eventually he sends the Messiah who comes to save mankind. That's the story of the Bible. So here what we're looking at is the story of God choosing a man. That was the last 2 weeks. And now through that man, he's creating a nation. So we're already in Genesis 25, and we saw the birth of Jacob and Esau. And we saw, even while they're in their mother's womb, they were fighting, they were wrestling. It was a kind of a foreshadow of the battle between the Israelites and the Moabites, who are the descendants of Esau. So Esau is born and Jacob is grasping his heel. And the name Jacob means grasping the heel. And in Malachi 3:1 and also in Romans 9 verse, I think it's around verse 12, it says, Jacob I loved, Esau I hated. And God did not hate Esau, but God chose Jacob. So this is the story of God choosing the younger over the older. Which means that we as Gentiles who are symbolic of Jacob, God is giving his salvation, his kingdom to us, even as Gentiles. And, but he gives it as well to those of the Jewish nation who will put their faith in Jesus. So that's, we saw that, and we saw Esau selling his birthright basically for a bowl of stew. How sad is that? And we thought, gee, that could be in some ways symbolic of what many of us have done. Now we're going to skip the story of Abimelech, Isaac and Abimelech in chapter 26. We're going to go straight to Genesis chapter 27. I'm wishing you could see this awesome PowerPoint with these great pictures, but anyway.
You can see your PowerPoint now.
You can. Wow, that's weird.
I'm trying to pull it up all the way.
All right, good. Yep. So let's start in Genesis 27. I'm going to read verse 1 through 4. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, my son. Here I am, he answered. But Isaac said, I am now an old man and don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your equipment, your quiver, your bow, go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me, prepare me the kind of tasty food I like, and bring it to me so that I may give you my blessing before I die. So, it turns out Esau had already given away his birthright to Jacob, but now Isaac is going to give him, he's going to renege on that agreement because he wants to favor Esau. This despite the fact that Esau had put them through a lot of grief. If you go back to Genesis 26, you find out that Esau had already married two Hittite women, which was totally against anything that his father would want at all. So anyway, he calls him in to give his blessing. Is somebody's talking? Can I?
Oh, right. That's okay.
All right.
Keep going.
All right, I'll keep going. Anyway, so he calls in Esau and he says he's going to give him his blessing. All right, but, that was against the law, basically. The law was that, the tradition was all the sons need to become together and then the father will give the blessing to the son that he chooses. But instead, he decides to trick Jacob, and he's going to bless Esau without even allowing Jacob to be there. But sitting back of the room, you can even see it in the picture, is mom. That's Rachel. And Rachel's going to step in and basically try to trick Isaac. So Esau's at fault here. Isaac's at fault here. Really, the whole situation is of a very dysfunctional family. We see Rebecca as a manipulative schemer. We see Jacob as selfish and a cunning deceiver. We see Isaac as a person who is showing total favoritism, despite the fact that God had already told him that he was going to choose the younger son. And then we see Esau, who also is in on the whole thing. All right, but let's keep reading. Now Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to her son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, overheard your father saying to your brother Esau, bring me some game and prepare me some tasty food to eat, so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die. Now my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock, bring me two choice young goats, so I can prepare some tasty food for your father, just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father to eat, so that he may give you his blessing before he dies." Jacob said to Rebekah's mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man. I'll have smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him, which of course he is, and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing." His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say and go get them for me." This is kind of an interesting passage here, where Rebekah says, "Look, let the curse fall on me," which reminds me of Jesus, because Jesus offered his life and he let the curse fall on him as well. And then let's read on. "So he went and got them and he brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food for just the way his father liked it. Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her elder son, which he had in the house, put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then he handed to her son, Jacob, the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and asked, 'My father.' 'Yes, my son,' he answered. 'Who is it?' Jacob said to his father, 'I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game, so that you may give me your blessing.' Isaac asked his son, 'How did you find it so quickly, my son?' 'The Lord your God gave me success,' he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, 'Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not.' Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, 'The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau.' He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau, so he proceeded to bless him. 'Are you really my son Esau?' he asked. 'I am,' he replied. Then he said, 'My son, bring me some of your game to eat, so that I may give you my blessing.' Jacob brought it to him, and he ate. And he brought some wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, 'Come here, my son, and kiss me.' Then he went to him, and he kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, 'Ah, the smell of my son, like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you heaven's dew and earth's richness and abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you, and may people bow down to you, be lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you, and may those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed.' After Isaac finished blessing him, and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father. Then he said to him, 'My father, please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing.' His father, Isaac, asked him, 'Who are you?' 'I'm your son,' he answered, 'your firstborn Esau.' Isaac trembled violently and said, 'Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came and I blessed him. And indeed, he will be blessed.' 'Who are you?' he says. And the seed is revealed." This is a very sad scene. A lot of pathos. Isaac trembles with great trembling, and Esau lets out a loud and bitter cry. The message here is an interesting one, because the bottom line is, Jacob I loved, Esau I hated. And God uses the deceit, the manipulation, the favoritism, all of this to his advantage. Because the bottom line is, God had already chosen, from the time he was in the womb, God had chosen Jacob. And God's plans are not going to be thwarted even by the very human weakness of Isaac and Jacob. And so the struggle between Jacob and Esau is a foreshadowing of God choosing the Gentiles over the unfaithful Jews, but it's also a foreshadow of the strife between Israel and Edom. In fact, let's read Genesis 37, 38 through 40. Esau said to his father, "Do you have only one blessing, my father? Bless me too, my father." Then Esau wept aloud. His father Isaac answered him, "Your dwelling will be away from the earth's riches, away from the dew of heaven. You will live by the sword. You will serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you will throw his yoke from your neck." And by the way, that's exactly what happened. Edom served Israel, all right, from the time of David. This is talking about the nation. The nation of Edom served Israel from the time of David down to Joram, at which point Edom threw off the yoke of Judah and then was an independent nation until it was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. So again, we see this prophecy fulfilled. Then in Genesis 27:41, like Cain, Esau decides, "I'm going to kill my younger brother." But God saves Jacob by sending him off. So Genesis 28:1-4. So Isaac called for Jacob and blessed him. Then he commanded him, "Do not marry a Canaanite woman. Go at once to Paddan Aram," which would be in northwest Syria today, "to the house of your mother's father, Bethuel. Take a wife for yourself there from among the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you, and may you make you fruitful and increase your numbers until you become a community of peoples. May he give you and your descendants the blessing given to Abraham, so that you may take possession of land when you now reside as a foreigner. The land God gave to Abraham." Then Isaac sent Jacob on his way, and he went to Paddan Aram, to Laban, son of Bethuel, the Aramean, the brother of Rebekah, who is the mother of Jacob and Esau. And so God's plan is continuing here. Isaac blesses Jacob, and basically passing the blessing that God gave to Abraham, he passed to Isaac. And now as Isaac is passing that blessing to Jacob, Jacob will later on pass it to Judah, because the line of the Messiah is going to come through Jacob's son Judah, which we'll learn about later in tonight's lesson. But basically Isaac says, no, you can't be marrying a Canaanite, because they don't believe in Jehovah. They don't believe in the God of Israel. And that was a wise thing, I guess. All right, Genesis 28:10-15. Jacob left Beersheba, which would be in southern Israel today, and he set out for Haran. We know about Haran, right? That's where his uncle lived and his grandfather had lived. So when he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head, and he lay down to sleep. So Jacob's sleeping, and his pillow is a stone. That's a famous story. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angel of God were ascending and descending on it. Now, Jesus refers to this right there in the trial before Caiaphas, where he says, "You're going to see the angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man." And he's referring back to this picture of Jacob. All right. Anyway, there above it stood the Lord, and he said, "I'm the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're living, on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. You will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I promised you." Then Jacob awoke from his sleep. He thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, Now, the story of Jacob is the story of man who's transformed from being a lying, deceitful, weak, willful, pleasure-seeking man to becoming a great man of God, which his father, Isaac, really never did. So here but Jacob needs encouragement. So God encourages him with this very interesting dream in which he sees the angels ascending and descending, bringing the blessings, and he says, I will bless you as I promised I would bless Abraham. And of course, there's a very famous Led Zeppelin song, right? About the stairway to heaven. Well, that comes from this story, I guess. He says, I will be with you even when you leave the promised land. He says, I'm going to bring you back. So Jacob is about to leave the promised land, and he's going to be gone for 21 years on a very long adventure. So here's the picture. Here's my picture. There's Jacob with his head resting on the pillar of a rock. And so God is basically reassuring Jacob, yes, I have a plan for you. Because of the faith of Abraham, I'm going to bless the world through you. So now Jacob travels to Haran, where he's going to find a wife, which is kind of an interesting and fairly long story. But what's going to happen here is the deceiver Jacob is going to be deceived by his uncle Laban. So let's read 29:16-18. Genesis 29:16-18. So Jacob arrives in Padan Aram, and he comes to a well, and he's praying to God that God would send him the right person. Let's read verses 16-18. Here we go. Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Jacob was in love with Rachel, and he said, I'll work for you 7 years, return for your daughter Rachel. So unlike Isaac, who when he arrived to Bethuel to get a wife who had tons and tons of money and camels and goats, and he could essentially pay for his bride, Jacob shows up with nothing. And so basically then he has to essentially sort of buy his wife from Laban. Now it says Leah had weak eyes, but apparently that was a euphemism for she was, let's say, homely, not beautiful, not very attractive. She was the older daughter. And so generally the rule in those days was you have to marry the older daughter first and then the younger daughter. And so basically then Laban says to Jacob, you have to work for me for 7 years. Laban said, verse 19, it is better that I give her to you than some other man. Stay here with me. So Jacob served 7 years to get Rachel, but it seemed like only a few days to him because of his love for her. All right. So basically then Jacob says, look, if you work for 7 years, I'm going to give you Rachel. So he works for 7 years, and then they have the wedding, and Laban deceives Jacob. So Laban brought together all the people of the place and gave a feast. But when the evening came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and Jacob made love to her. I don't know, it must have been dark in that tent. Either that or Jacob had a little bit too much wine, because you think he might have noticed, oh, this is the ugly older sister. And Laban gave his sister Zilpah to his daughter as an attendant. When morning came, there was Leah. So Jacob said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? I served you for Rachel, didn't I? Why have you deceived me? Laban replied, it is not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish this daughter's bridal week, then we'll give the younger one also in return for another 7 years of work. And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah. Then Laban gave his daughter Rachel to be his wife. But he had to, basically then, by now he served 14 years. He served 7 years to get Leah. Then he served 7 more years to get Rachel. All right. But unfortunately, God favors Leah over Rachel. And God seems to always choose the weak. He seems to choose the outcast. And because Rachel was beautiful and Leah was not, God gives children first to Leah. All right. And so Jacob marries Rachel, and but Leah starts having children. And the story of Jacob's children starts there. Basically, he has Reuben, which means the Lord has looked on my affliction. Then he has Simeon, because the Lord has heard me. Then he has Levi. Now my husband will join to me. These are all like Leah's complaint that Jacob doesn't love her, that he actually loves Rachel. But now that he's had three children, she's starting to feel like, hey, that's actually working out okay. Then she has Judah, or Yehuda, says, I will praise the Lord. So Leah's starting to actually feel pretty good about it. And Judah, of course, is the father of Jesse, and the father of David, and Solomon, and ultimately the father of Jesus. Then she has a fifth child, a fifth son, Issachar, which means God has given me my hire. And then Zebulun, which God has given me a good dowry. All right. And then Leah stops having children. And there was a law in Mesopotamia that the child of a maidservant or a slave could be legally the child of the wife by laying the child on knees. And in Genesis 30, verse 3, although it doesn't say in the NIV, let's read that. Then she said, here is Bilhah, my servant, sleep with her so that she can bear children for me and I too can build a family through her. So now what Rachel's doing is kind of like what Sarah had done, not really counting on the Lord. Anyway, in the Hebrew here, it says that she placed the child on his knee, which was the law, so the children could be as if they were Rachel's children. So Bilhah, the maid of Rachel, gives birth to Dan, which means God has judged me. And that's Rachel's lament because God has judged her. She can't have children. And then Bilhah has another child, Naphtali, which means I've wrestled with my sister and I've prevailed. All right. And then Zilpah, the slave or maid of Leah, gives birth to Gad, which means good fortune. And Asher, which means for a woman, will call me happy. So now Jacob has 10 children. That's pretty cool. Now let's go to chapter 30, verse 22 through 24. I'll start in verse 21. Sometime later, she gave birth to a daughter and named her Dinah. So now finally, Jacob has a daughter. Dinah, won't you blow your horn, right? Then verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel. He listened to her and he enabled her to conceive. She became pregnant. She gave birth to a son and said, God has taken away my disgrace. So she named him Joseph and said, may the Lord add to me another son. And Joseph is an amazing figure. We're not going to cover Joseph. That's going to be our last lesson of this series from the book of Genesis. But Joseph means God has taken away my reproach. In other words, finally, God has given me a son. So now, Jacob's been there in near Haran for 21 years. And God blesses him. He gives him lots and lots of descendants. Everything he touches turns to gold. There's the story about the spotted and speckled sheep and all that sort of stuff. Everything Jacob touched is blessed. He has goats and camels and sheep, and now all the other cousins, the other children of Laban, are very jealous of Jacob. So finally at night, Jacob and Leah and Rachel and Bilhah and Zilpah, they all go fleeing. All right? And so here we see, and then there's this interesting thing. Let's look at Genesis 31, verse 30. Sorry, I have to summarize all this, but if I read it all, we'll never get through the thing here. All right, here we go. Genesis 31, verse 30. So what happens is they go off like a week into the northwest, kind of headed towards the promised land, and then Laban goes chasing after them. He chases them down. Now, you'd think he'd be trying to get his goats back or his sheep back or his camels, or maybe his daughters, or his other riches, because Jacob has deceived him by taking off. But no, look at this, verse 30. Now you've gone off because you long to return to your father's house, household, but why did you steal my gods? So he comes in, and he says, where are my teraphim? This is such a strange scene. So Jacob is left with all his wealth, with his nieces and nephews, with his daughters, with his all his herds. But what's he want? He wants the teraphim, the household idols. Well, it turns out there's one of the Nuzi tablets. This is not a very news-filled tablet. Nuzi is an actual city. The Nuzi tablets, it says, he who holds the teraphim gets the inheritance. So that explains what he's doing here. Basically, Laban is going because he wants to be able to give his inheritance to his sons. So that's an interesting scene there. At the close of the story, Jacob is returning to Canaan. Remember, God said, I will bless you and I will bring you back to this place, because the story of the Genesis, the story of God choosing a man and choosing a nation and creating a nation through whom he can bless the world. So at the close of the story, Jacob is returning to Canaan, having received much of what he was promised when he left Canaan. He arrived in Haran with the clothes on his back. He's returning with great wealth, two wives, and 12 sons and a daughter. But unfortunately, on the way, he meets with his worst fear. Because between where he is in Haran and Israel and the promised land is his brother Esau, who lives in the land east of the Jordan River where Edom is. So now we're in Genesis 32, verse 4. I'll start in verse 3. So basically then, the thing that Jacob really feared, of course, was his brother, who he knew wanted to kill him. I'll start in verse 1. Jacob also went on his way, and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw them, he said, this is the camp of God. So he named the place Mahanaim. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, this is what you are to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban, and I've remained there till now. I have cattle and donkeys, sheep and goats, male and female servants. Now I'm sending this message to my lord that I might find favor in your eyes. When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, we went to your brother Esau, and now he's coming to meet you with 400 men are with him. Uh-oh. So now Jacob is shaking in his boots because Esau is a strong man. He's kind of like a dictator. And he has an army of 400 men, and Jacob has no defense against that. But what he does instead is he says a faithful prayer. I'm telling you, Jacob is a different man than when he was. Verse 8. Verse 6. When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, we went to your brother Esau, and now he's coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him. In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and the herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. Then Jacob prayed, O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Lord, who said to me, go back to your country and your relatives, I will make you prosper. I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two camps. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, I will surely make you prosper, and I will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted. He spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau, 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 female camels, and lots of stuff. So basically, he says a faithful prayer, but then he wisely decides to pacify Esau with some gifts. All right? All right, and then he meets him in Genesis 32, 10 through 12. I'm sorry. He goes back across the Jabbok River, where he asks God one more time to bless him. The word Jabbok means struggle. Can you see the Jabbok River? It's in the northeast corner there of that map. So basically, he goes out and he wants to get the assurance of God. So let's read Genesis 32, 25 through 31. Here we go. All right, I'll start in verse 22. That night, Jacob got up, he took his two wives, his two female servants, his 11 sons, and he crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have wrestled with God and struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask me my name?" Then he blessed them there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. So here we see Jacob. Jacob's a man of great faith. So the angel comes down, and Jacob spends hours late at night just wrestling with this angel. So apparently, Jacob was pretty dang strong. You know, in verse 26, Jacob is actually winning the fight. He's actually pounding down that angel. He's about to beat him. So the angel touches his hip and injuring him, giving him a permanent limp. And basically, and then we see Jacob saying, "I will not let go until you bless me." So Jacob receives the blessing. Jacob is a man of great faith who makes practical plans, but he also prays, and he also demands, essentially, of God to bless him. So the angel, who is basically in a personification of God, blesses Jacob by calling him Israel, which means struggles with God. So Jacob means grasps the heel, and Israel means struggle with God. And really, that's the history of Israel. Israel, to this very day, has been struggling with God, but God overcame. But Israel also means God's fights, or God rules. So Israel has a double meaning. It means struggle with God, but it also means God's rules. So Jacob struggled with God, but God turned that around, and he used Jacob to triumph and fight and gain the blessing. Jacob emerged broken, but named and blessed. From this time, Israel struggled and contended with God. And we too, as disciples, we must contend with God, as God fights both against us and for us as disciples, for us to give us great victories, because God will discipline us. In some ways, we are like Jacob as we wrestle with God in prayer, and we wrestle with to have a deeper relationship with God. All this happened at Peniel. So Jacob exultantly proclaims in Genesis 32, verse 30. He says this, "Because I saw the God face to face, yet my life was spared." This is the high point of Jacob's career. It's kind of the equivalent of his Genesis 22, where Abraham trusted God and was willing to sacrifice his only son. So now the story of Jacob is done. And we don't really have time to talk about Dinah and the Shechemites, when Simeon and Levi lose their birthright. And in Genesis 35, where Isaac and Rachel die. And then finally, the 12th son, Benjamin, is born. Benjamin is actually born in the Promised Land, unlike the other 11 children, and Reuben commits adultery, and we learn about Esau's descendants. Now, what I want to do is I want to just tell you just a little tiny bit about Joseph, and we started kind of late, so we'll end. I'll just tell you a little bit about Joseph, because Joseph, like Isaac, is a prefigure of the Messiah. Joseph was the favored, chosen son of his father. And what happened to Joseph? He became a slave in Egypt. But God raised him up from the position of being a slave to being at the right hand of Pharaoh, the chosen adopted son of Pharaoh. The picture of Joseph is the picture of Jesus, because Jesus was at the right hand of his Father in heaven. What happened? He came down to earth and he lived amongst the slaves. And of course, later on in Hosea 11, 1, God's going to say, out of Egypt, I called my son. So the fact that Joseph became a slave in Egypt is a foreshadow of Jesus coming to here to earth and taking the form of a human being. So Joseph's at the right hand of his father, becomes a slave, then he's lifted up to become the right hand of the king of Egypt. And when after Jesus died, he too was raised up to the right hand of God. Just like Jesus is the only son, just like Isaac was the only son, Joseph is the favorite and chosen son. And he was a shepherd. And he had a dream. And in the dream, he's the king of the Jews. Right? And all the Jews bow down to him. All right? Again, symbolic of Jesus being the king of the Jews. And then his brothers decide to kill him. Ah, just like the Jews decided to kill Jesus. And God foiled that plan. Instead, they betrayed him for 20 pieces of silver, whereas Jesus was betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. But the approximate price of a slave at that time was 20 pieces of silver. And the approximate price of a slave in the time of Jesus was 30 pieces of silver. And the symbolism is very clear. So Jacob becomes a slave in Egypt. Because you know what? Out of Egypt, I called my son. And yet God raised him up to the right hand of Pharaoh. And in order to be a prefigure of the Messiah, you have to save Israel. And Joseph literally saved Israel. And not only did he save Israel, we'll find out, he also saved the Gentile nations as well. So we're going to see that next week. We're going to see Joseph, who's one of the most amazing figures in the entire Bible. And Joseph is going to be a prefigure of the Messiah. All right, so sorry about the technology glitches there. Hope everybody had a good time. Hope the lesson was practical and worthwhile. Anyway, I'm going to let you all go. If you want to have discussion groups there, that'd be fine. And we'll see you next Wednesday. Hopefully we'll see you Friday night at the harvest party. And who knows, maybe even Saturday morning on the hike. All right, thanks everybody.
Yeah, and we have a hike to Yosemite on Saturday. If you want to join us, and if you need a ride, just let me know or call the number. We have our number and our Whitney text. Just call that number or send a text if you need a ride. We will leave at 6 a.m. At John's place. Yeah, and then we should be back by 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It will be fun.
It sure will.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, John.
Sure. Sorry, I had a little bit of COVID fog. That was an okay lesson, but not the best one.